Listen to Today with Sean O'Rourke with the RTE Radio Player.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Now, the financial controversy surrounding the Central Remedial Clinic and Rehab has had effects beyond charitable donations to just those two organisations. The knock-on repercussions are being seen right across the charitable sector. Last week, Childline issued a public appeal for donations as it is 20% now below last year's funding levels. Well, to hear exactly what that means for the service, I'm joined now by Mary Nicholson, who is Advocacy Manager with the ISPCC. Mary, thank you very much indeed for coming into us this morning. I suppose let's just remind listeners of the work of Childline. How exactly does it operate? You take in hundreds of thousands of calls every year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Childline is effectively a 24-hour free phone listening service for children and young people up to the age of 18 in Ireland. And we get calls for all sorts of reasons. As you said, we get hundreds of thousands of calls. So we get children talking about very everyday issues. You get children and young people literally calling from under the blankets at night, you know, when they've plucked up the courage to call. As it currently stands, we're only able to answer 2 out of 3 calls. We strive to answer as many as possible, and we have online services as well that are available for young people. So obviously, if you're talking about a 20% hit to that, we are at serious risk. We're not there yet, thank God, but we are at serious risk of looking at the 24 element, you know, and having to close that. And the difficulty with that is it's the only service that's available for children and young people. And support services are very often 9 to 5, but children's issues aren't always 9 to 5.
So 2 out of 3 calls you're currently responding to, but that leaves, on my calculation, about 160,000 calls that you're not able to respond to.
Yeah, and it's something we've always struggled with. I mean, obviously, some of those are, you know, children who are repeatedly trying to get through. And the difficulty is if we reduce that any further, like at the moment, it's a case of we can divert them to our online services, or maybe they prefer to use the online services, or they will know that if they keep trying, they'll get through. But if you cut out that element of the 24-hour service, you know, you're simply saying to them, actually, no, we're shut, try again tomorrow. And we just can't have that.
I suppose you lose trust then with the children, because
Completely.
They're not going to go, OK, well, I'll ring them between 9 and 5 tomorrow.
Exactly. And it just doesn't work like that. I mean, our busiest periods and where we try to have around 30 lines open are in the evenings, are at the weekends, when children are either, you know, not in school, obviously. And then when it's nighttime, when, you know, when they're at home, when they're thinking, maybe when they're lonely, where emotions are running high. You know, so they're the times that the service is needed, when other services are not available. And we really just have to be there when they pluck the courage to do that.
I saw a documentary recently that filmed in Childline, and one of the things the people who take the calls there were saying is that what happens at night, because they don't have enough staff on, is that they'll often pick up a call that's been on hold for quite a long period of time, and they hear a child snoring at the end of the line.
Yeah, I mean,
fallen asleep waiting for the response.
Yeah, absolutely. Children press redial, 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 you know, because we always encourage them to stay on the line. And sometimes, again, they're calling because maybe they're lonely and, you know, they want to have somebody to talk to, and just to have somebody there in the house with them if they're on their own, and all sorts of different reasons, you know. So to have a child who's falling asleep online because they can't get through, you know, obviously isn't good enough. As I said, we do have online services, you know, that we can direct them to. But, you know, having children calling, you know, when maybe the abuser has left the room, you know, is obviously very distressing, both for the caller and for the person receiving the calls. And, you know, we're always there to listen, whatever the call is. Some relate to bullying, some relate to mental health issues. You know, so they do call for every sort of reason, and it's essential we're there.
And the fact that you are getting 600,000 calls a year, it's pretty obvious that you've had... Children know about you.
Yeah.
That it is one of the first ports of call for many children then when they're in trouble. Is this through advertising campaigns, or has that grown over the years? Do the number of calls go up every year?
The number of calls do appear to kind of go up every year. They've stabilised a little more recently with the emergence of online, and we get a huge amount of contacts through online. But I do think there's a huge awareness among children and young people. And I mean, if we have that awareness, we need to ensure that we can follow up with actually providing a service for them. You know, there's little point in us advertising saying call us if we're not going to be there to be able to take the call, because sometimes the most difficult part for a young person is actually picking up the phone and dialing that number, maybe talking about something that they have never ever spoken about before to anybody, and you know, to not be able to get through obviously would be an absolute crisis for us.
And can you tell me, I mean, just how much has your funding been affected, and do you put it directly to the kind of controversies we've seen in CRC and rehab?
Yeah, our funding has been, it costs almost 4 million to run Childline every year, which is a 24-hour 365 service. And what we've noticed is we were beginning to stabilise. There was a recession, obviously, that hit everybody over the last number of years. So things were challenging, but things were starting to pick up towards the middle of last year. Then, unfortunately, around kind of November time, various charity scandals hit, and we absolutely noticed a fairly immediate in or around 20% cut in the amount of public donations
really?
That we were getting. Yeah,
you would link.
I mean,
that
obviously,
to the scandals,
we can't say definitively, but it came in or around that time. It hasn't really risen. It's, you know, it's continued to be a 20% decline. And if we're still in that position in the year end, you know, it leaves us with some very difficult questions to ask ourselves.
And $4 million it costs you to run every year. Does the government give any of that money?
Very recently, we have received funding from the National Office of Suicide Prevention, but we still need to fundraise about 95% of that. And we rely on volunteers. We've almost 500 volunteers nationwide, so we couldn't provide the service if we didn't have them. And, you know, obviously in terms of supporting, managing, recruiting volunteers, that's expensive business, and we want to do it right. We want to make sure that people are trained properly to be able
to. It's quite an extensive training process, isn't it?
It is.
To work for Childline, even as an unpaid volunteer.
Exactly. I mean, like, it's an 8-week long training course with, you know, two sessions every week, and then you know you have listen-ins, you have all sorts of supervised, you know, supervision and everything, because it is really important. This is an important job that they're doing, so it's important that they're both supported and trained.
And are you finding that the numbers of people volunteering, is that static? That hasn't been affected, or has it, by the recent controversies around charity?
That's the one thing that we seem to be able to kind of maintain. That, I mean, it's a difficult job in terms of trying to recruit and train volunteers and keep the numbers up, but it's something that kind of remains consistent. People seem to be kind of willing to volunteer.
So it's like people are still willing to give to charity, they just don't want to put money in boxes because they're not trusting of where that money is going, but they're prepared to give their time when they can.
Very
see
often,
what's
but the difficulty with that is if we don't have the money, then we can't, you know, train and recruit the volunteers. So they go hand in hand. And I mean, we have noticed on the street, you know, the members of the public are disillusioned. You know, they are kind of wondering, where is my money going? And they're okay questions to ask. And we would say to people, do ask those questions. Make sure the charity that you're giving to is transparent. We publish our accounts online. You know, we're very open about that. And that's important.
And where is that $4 million going? Is that in staff costs or phone costs, or how are you spending it?
It's a mixture of things. So it's in training and recruiting and supporting and maintaining, you know, over 500 volunteers. They work around 10 offices around the country. And we also have staff, obviously, who need to support those, but also who need to take the calls at, you know, in the middle of the night, where you're not going to be able to get volunteers on a regular basis, to keep up with the technology. Like, as you can imagine, trying to keep up with the IT and young people and making sure that they can get through in the way that they want to is an expensive business. So it goes through all of that, you know, the cost of it. And I mean, for us, you know, almost $4 million, if you were to do that as a commercial entity, it would probably cost a lot more.
Mm.
But it would cost a
and
lot more.
Can I ask you, on the wider picture, I mean, I suppose many of the children, I mean, as you say, some of them are just ringing up for company, for chats, they're dealing with bullying, but many are dealing with much more serious issues, abuse, it could be sexual abuse. Do you have the resources then to help those children, or are you just a listening service? What happens to those children when, say, for example, really big child protection issues come to the fore?
As you said, there's probably about 40,000 calls that come around abuse issues. And what we would do is, we are a listening service, but if the child wants to take that further, if they're at risk, if they tell us who they are, then we can signpost them to other services. We would obviously report it, you know, to social services if that's what needed to happen. You know, so we are there for them. They don't have to call just one off. You know, we can talk to them on an ongoing basis. And when children are talking about abuse, very often it takes a while to get them to the point where they're going to be able to talk to a social worker or a guard. So we would
even
help
to divulge their identity,
that.
I would imagine.
Exactly. So we try and go at their pace and let them know what they can do, what their options are, and to try and empower them to make that decision. And if they are at risk, very clearly tell them, you know, if we do know who you are, then we will have to report that, but we'll help you through that. And we're here for you whenever you need to call.
If people do want to donate?
Absolutely. If they could text Childline to 50300, that would donate €2. And also, if they can check our website, you know, there's always fundraisers going on, and we'd love to get people to volunteer as well.
Okay, well, listen, Mary Nicholson, thank you very much indeed for coming into us this morning.